Mrs. Maxine Ray conducted an interview for the Civil Rights Project sponsored by the Kentucky Historical Oral History Commission. And I'm interviewing Mr. Selvin Butts here at his home in Bowling Green. Today's date is March the 21st, 2000. And we're going to talk about the Civil Rights Movement and all in Warren County. Now, Mr. Butts, would you give me your full name, please?
Selvin Harding Butts, Senior.
Okay, and what's your parents' name?
My father was named Follis Butts. My mother's name Holly Butts.
Okay, what's your date of birth?
February the 6th, 1932.
I'm going to talk a little bit about your education. Where did you go to school at?
I went to State Street High School. I also went to trade school.
What is your occupation?
I'm retired.
But where'd you
retired from Eaton Corporation.
Do you belong to any civil rights or civil organizations or anything?
Well, we don't have a chapter now, but I did belong to the NAACP for ever since I was in high school. I started out in youth chapter, and I remained in the NAACP up until a couple of years ago. Of course, we don't have a chapter now. Even when we didn't have a chapter in Bowling Green, I still sent my membership into the national. So that's something that I've always done, because I believe in the NAACP.
Did you hold any offices in that organization?
Yes. When I first, as an adult, when I first came in the adult chapter, Reverend J.E. Jones was president, and I was publicity chairman for the chapter. I've also served as political action chairman, and I've served as president, vice president, served as vice president under maybe two or three different presidents. And then I served after Willie Madison left Bowling Green. I took over as president. But in all the material I was sent out, I was put interim president because I knew that there's no such thing in NAACP as interim president. But I would do that because I knew when election time came up, I was not going to run. Because at the same time, I was chairman of the Human Rights Commission, and I didn't feel that I should hold two offices in similar organizations.
How big was the membership when you were, when it was active here?
We had, I guess we had 60, from 60 to 100 members during the
Can you remember any of the cases or any particular case that you all worked on, or were there any?
Oh yes, we had many.
Many of them.
One of the things that we worked on with the Human Rights Commission was the open housing ordinance, which was passed. Thomas Mitchell and I, our duty at the time was to organize the people to go to City Hall to try to get it passed. When we went to City Hall to meet with them, we filled City Hall. The meeting was tabled, hoping, I guess, that people would not come back. But when we went back, we carried more people. We had them out on the sidewalks, that we had so many people. The ordinance was passed, and we had help in that ordinance from people like William Natcher, and even the mayor, Bob Graham, was for it. But the city manager at that time, and I can't remember his name, but he was deadly against it, and so was quite a few other people in the city. But it was passed. It was passed on the second round.
So this was a nonviolent demonstration?
We had no problem with that. Another thing that we worked on was those years later, and at the time I was interim president, was the there was a magazine at Weston called the Bowling Green Magazine. They put out an article about the KKKs, and they were pitching the KKKs as a organization like the Kiwanis. So we had I had a problem with that, and I wrote Dr. I was trying to think of the president of Wesleyan. I have it here. Zacharias. I wrote him a letter concerning about the article, and he invited me to a meeting. And it was Henry Totino, Reverend Zachariah Nichols, and myself that was invited to the meeting, because I wrote a letter to all the churches, all the black churches in Bowling Green, and I asked them, asked the ministers to write a letter to Dr. Zachariah. And I also sent a letter to them concerning this. And there were only one minister that wrote a letter. This is a letter you might want to read at some time. But...
And you only had one response?
And only one minister, Reverend Nichols, that wrote a letter to Dr. Zacharias, protesting the magazine. We did get some feedback. Dr. Zacharias, he worked with us, and we had an apology in the next magazine. We also sent a letter, Henry Totino, who was a member of the Human Rights Commission, and later was the executive director of the Human Rights Commission. He was also involved. We sent a letter to the Bates Company, and they look at different magazines and papers, and they grade them. And they were very upset about the letter, about the magazine. And there's a couple of letters from that that you probably can look at, you know, always return to. But to show that what we did, I managed to keep those over the years. There are some other things that, well, during that time, we decided that we would try to get anti-mask ordinance passed in the city.
Anti-mask
ordinance. And what that was, that the KKKs could not march with masks on. That was would expose them. And we had many meetings at the church now, which is Downtown Church. Is that the name of it? Downtown, where the State Theater used to be?
Fountain Square Church,
okay. We had meetings there at their old church, which was on Inanola, I believe it was. And when we met at City Hall to try to get the ordinance passed, there were only two blacks that showed up, Howard Bailey and myself. And when Howard Bailey and I parked in front of the old courthouse to walk down City Hall, KKs were pulling up. They were getting out of the cars, taking their guns off, putting them in the trunks, things like that. But it was passed that night because there were so many white citizens in Bowling Green that felt the same way we did. They came to the meetings, and they were at City Hall. There were two black women.
Well, did the KKK ever march on Bowling Green?
Well, yeah, they had marched around the square with their masks on. If you remember back, I think Linda Ferguson was arrested one time downtown while they were marching. She was upset, and I think she had it to some type of hassle with them. And once the masks were taken off, I can't remember marching. There was an article here in the Western Herald that they interviewed me the night before the Martin Luther King March. And at the time, there was something on TV concerning it. Here's the story planned.
Class against a withdrawals file from the NAACP.
We were,
and you said they interviewed you the night before?
Yes, that's the interview. Interviewing me.
Before the night before tomorrow.
Yes. This is the whole art bunch.
How did
that? Recall the 60s.
Oh. Well, the marches that they had were were there many blacks there protesting the march?
Yes, there were people, you know, around the square, but, you know, we never did fight to try to stop them from marching because that's their right. They have a right to march, just like we have a right to march. And if we tried to stop their march, or if their march would stop, then we wouldn't have a right either. So they have a right to express the way they feel. And we never tried to fight that. But we felt that there shouldn't be masks. And the anti-mask ordinance was passed. And there was no problem getting it passed. We've had some good people in the city to work with over the years. And I think that's why, you know, we have been successful. But there's one thing I always felt about the KKKs, and that is that you always knew where they were coming from. And we have so many other people that hide behind masks. You don't know where they're coming from. And they are more dangerous than the people that are out in the open. People that smile in your face and they plot behind your back against your organization. Even some of those same people have joined our organizations at times and worked against us, even within the organization. So, you know.
You knew where the KKK were and what they
sure.
did and what they were going to do.
Even I think Toby Pierce was the leader of Grand Dragon against this area, and his son hung himself in jail. And he even sent word to me and asked me would I help him try to find out what really happened to his son. So I think when you do things the right way, you get respect from people regardless of how they're doing.
Is the Klan still active in the...
Well, you don't hear, I'm sure they are. You don't hear much, you know, about them locally, but I'm sure they are.
Do you, was there any trouble here about any kind of sit-ins or any kind of anything with restaurants and all? Do you remember?
We had planned, I was going to say, we held up quite a bit of money from the city at one time because we wanted firemen. We had no black firemen. And they would tell us that no firemen had put in applications. So we helped the money up through the state commission. The state human rights commission was a clearing agency for certain grants, money. And working with John Johnson, who was a employee of the state commission, also John was president of the state NAACP, and we held the money up, and we met with the city manager and all different ones to discuss things that we wanted to do. Through this holding the money up, we got three firemen. Well, we got actually ended up with two. One could not pass the physical. But there were about 30, I guess, that came down, and Dr. Moxley and Chuck Neblett, who was our director of Human Rights Commission at the time, worked with them on taking the test, on how to take the test. And out of the 30, the names were given to them, out of the 30, only three showed up. And Doc and Chuck worked with them, and those three passed the written test. But one could not pass the physical. But the other two were hired by the city. Also, during that time, we were meeting, the city did not have a city treasurer. And I asked Chuck Coates, why can't we attempt to hire a city, a black city treasurer? He said we can. And he found one, and he hired one. And one time we did, and I think he stayed here in Baltimore for a couple of years. He was from up in the eastern part of the United States. Also, we had more, a couple of policemen added to the list. And all that was accomplished by us on nothing like it. So sometimes I think you have to either embarrass people or you get them on the pike before it hurts. But all those things came out and we're gone from there. We have a good city manager, which our coach is a good city manager. And I think he's always been fair. Before that, we had one that was terrible. Chuck's been here about 24 years, and he's always worked with us and all organizations. And I think he's been an asset to the program. Some other things that I was trying to think that we went through was we had a problem with police harassment and things, and I have some cases. Greg McKinney was president of the NAACP at the time. Greg McKinney was one of the best presidents the NAACP has ever had. And he may not get credit of it, he was. And Greg investigated all these different cases. All these police were harassment.
That was a large number, 30 blacks showed up for the meeting. Mm-hmm.
Here is something where a black moved into a white neighborhood. See who he is? And he had problems.
Did they have many incidents like this with the families moving in? Were there very many of those that just...
Well, yes, there was, I think Ron Lewis had a problem. He was renting, he wasn't buying, he was renting, and Ron Lewis had a problem. Of course, years way back, and I think I did, my granddaughter did something on J.E. Curtin Dog on Sunday at church. You know, he moved into an all-white neighborhood on Morgantown Road. He was the first black to move into an all-white neighborhood. They burned a cross in his yard.
Oh.
That was out on the Morgantown Road. Yes. But, I don't know how I kept some of these things. Mm-hmm. Most of all these cases, Greg got those up, he investigated, he turned them over to state lawyers. He was really interesting.
Son, that?
Michael Kendricks. He had to walk in the snow. His feet froze. And he removed.
Was that the guy that after they took him to jail, they had to take him to school?
He had to take him He said, he said, Greyhound, that case. Greyhound, so many cases. Uh-huh. And for a while, they would follow Greg around.
Did they ever burn any crosses or anything in the graveyard?
No.
Does he ever?
No. But we were at a meeting one night, and Patsy Sloan was there, and we came down, and the police was throwing a light on Greg's car. They were there, but Greg says, see, Patsy's going to kill him. Hmm.
Now, that's Patsy Sloan, was she the mayor?
Yeah.
Okay.
Patsy was a good parenter. Patsy was very good. And I always just kind of sit here, someone else would probably know.
Yes, I know him. Well, now, are we still having any problems? Now, I know we still have problems, but are there as many as overt as they were then.
Uh-huh. Here's where I want to give a grip.
Oh, a policeman was recommended for this harassment.
Yeah.
So we've been out,
but the NAACP has done a good job in volunteering. And I remember seeing some material back many years ago. Dr. C.K. Jones was a member of the NAACP back then. That was before I went to Harvard. And they had a larger chapter. They had over 100 members. That was back before I was born. So the NAACP have been active in volunteering. A long time.
Okay. I'm out of questions. If you got something else, you want to say that's fine.
During the 19, when Ron was president, during the night, that was in 1975, and one of the things we worked on was educating our people concerning political action, voting, and we had different political education to, you know, educate them. We carried material out, we passed in the neighborhoods, and we also did a voter's registration. We went from door to door, and we registered people. And, you know, at one time we could not do that in Columbia. And David West filed suit in federal court. That's how we were able to start talking. David West did quite a few good things in Bowling Green. People talked about the bad things he did. They never talked about good things. You can make one mistake and you can do 100 good things and people will talk about the one mistake you made, not the others. David West, Dr. Marshall, with the program club, Tracy Lincoln said also. But you don't hear those same kind of things about, you know, you just hear the bad thing.
Is David West still in the school?
David West is still in the school. He died in Lowell. Yeah, this program was from the, this was a state program that was held in Bollinger.
Oh, NAACP.
Yeah, in 1975. Okay. And if you notice the title of what where we tell our children who are blind, the theme that we came up with.
Oh, that's good.
And it was because of the different problems that we were having, not just in Bowling Green, but in the state of Kentucky.
Yeah.
And I think Dr. Long came up with that for the state, the title, what we tell our children who are blind, and designed that they cover on the program. There were problems with trying to get black state policemen and things like that. And that's what the, that year we were working on some of those problems, not just local, I mean, statewide. That's what we were doing. But we've had some good people to help sponsor, to give money, like Pepsi Cola. They sponsored most of our banquets back then. I think he's dead or sold out, it's not there anymore. But when we got different people to come in to speak, some of the people we brought in, we would never have been able to bring them in if it had not been people like Pepsi Cola, those that have sponsored those people. And we brought some very important people. Mm-hmm. You know, we've had Ben Brooks here. Mm-hmm. And I've got some pictures of this, like Shirley Chisholm. Mm-hmm. She was here. And different ones like that.
Do you remember the man's name at the Pepsi Cola company then?
No, I don't remember.
Okay.
But I know Gwen and I, we should be with him. group met with him, and he did the sponsor. He sponsored Ben Hooks on drumming, and because we couldn't get Ben Hooks to go on there. His wife spoke in Frank, and I would enjoy it as much as I would have been. She was great. We have lost a lot by John Johnson coming out of the area. When John was in Louisville, John worked with us, and John would come to Bowling Green work with us. At one time, there were black teachers that weren't getting on. They would say they don't have any resumes from black teachers and things like that. And John came and we met John, Dr. Marshall, and we met. And he said he was sure there were, and we need to do something. He was going to meet with the Board of Education and doing something about it. And luckily we got some names of some of the people that had put in resumes. And we turned them over to John when he met with the school board. He had the names. So they hired about three of them. We worked with, you know, when the school integrated, that was a big problem.
Was it?
Yeah, you know, they had some clashes out there at the new school. And there were a group called Black Concerned Citizens, and there were five of us. Charles Taylor, Claude Burnham, Bill Lane, John Burnham. School board and superintendent, and we suggested certain things to them. One of the things we suggested was that at the time they needed they had a vacancy on the school board, and we recommended a black particular person at the time. They asked us to, if we would come up with a name. But first, before they did that, they offered it to Billy Lincoln, because Billy Lincoln, one of the board members they had umpired, well, referee football, basketball games, and he knew Bill, and he said, Billy would make us a good board. And Bill couldn't accept it because he lived in the county. He had to come to us from the county. So then they asked us if we would bring him. We carried him, Henry Jones, and they would not accept him.
Too interesting.
Now, Henry, you have to know him. Henry was very outspoken, and maybe they felt he was too outspoken, but they did not accept him. They said, let us come with him and see what you all think about it. They came with Joe. We accepted Joe. And of course, Joe served for a year. We also recommended that they appoint a pre-existing assistant principal. Listen to that trailblazer's name. Bob. Well, the way they explained it, it's like Grimm. Dr. Grimm was an angel. And why it's existing to have that job might wasn't true. If he owed any white person for that job, he owed it to the board. Because the board agreed Dr. Grimm did not want it. Recommended by us, and the board accepted where Dr. Grimm didn't. And the part where in there where you praise Dr. Grimm for calling in and giving the job, he did it because he had to do it. Because the board told him to do it. Not because he wanted to do it. And I have a problem with some of these things, and which puts it up.
How many years did you serve on the human rights?
I served over 20 years. And I thought at that time, there's only one other person I know of that served any longer or as long, that was Thomas Mitchell. And Thomas Mitchell was taken.
Chairman, you served on the House.
Yeah, on the House, yes.
there is no chair on the door. I served on a little bit of everything. I'll show you pictures.
Okay, well, tell me some of the other boards you served on.
Well, I was on the Red Cross Board. I was chairman of the Center Participation in Park Amenity Area. That was before we had, at the time, like the Housing Authority now, we have a council and things like that. They didn't have that. They would bring their problems to Citizen Participation. I served as advisor for the Delafield area. That's the sports. Some sports. And I was in sports then. I coached Baber, I was president of the Warren County Baber Association. I guess I was the first black president. I don't know. Maybe been no afterwards. I don't know. But I haven't heard of it. I was with my union. I was an officer in the union also. I was on the audit committee in the National Association of Machinists. And it's kind of hard to keep up with all the different things, but most of those that I stayed on a long time was in NAACP, Human Rights Commission. Those are the two where I stayed on quite a few years. And from time to time, we had many black citizens concerned committees and things would come up. And we would feel that, you know, we needed to work that way, where we could use all our energy and time on certain things. I think we have accomplished a lot with different people. Some of the people that I enjoyed working with, Doc, Charles Taylor, Ron Lewis was one good guy to work with. There was another fellow named Ron Davis. He was head of Big Brothers and Sisters. And Ron Davis, he worked with the youth at Bowling Green High when they would, he'd have to go out there and represent them, you know, when they would be spelling for school and different things like that. He would represent him. Ron stayed here for maybe 4 or 5 years. He finally left and went to UK. He's back to UK. He's an attorney now. We had a lot of good people like that. And all the people, a lot of good people that come into Bowling Green and work with us. Al Bailey, who lived, been a wonderful person. I remember when Bernstein didn't want to appoint me back to the Human Rights Commission. That was after this hold-up this morning. So he didn't want to appoint me back. He said I had too much influence. I'd been on so long, I had too much influence on the others. And Howard Bailey and a lady named Annie Archibald, she was president of the Women's Political Caucus. They went to Bernstein and told him that if he didn't, that he need to put me back. And Annie said, if you don't put him back, he was going to run for, he was already mayor, but he was going to run for, not council, but commissioner. Said, I'll see that you're defeated for the Women's Political Caucus. And he appointed me. That's the only way I got back. Howard has been very outspoken, and Howard sent my nomination in last year for the State Human Rights Commission. Had a, it was the anniversary, I think it was about the 30s, But anyway, they was having people nominated for the State Human Rights Commission Hall of Fame, and Howard submitted my name, and I applied for. I received a plaque and all, but I wasn't one that went into the Hall of Fame. And Howard said that, well, you shouldn't feel bad because almost all of them went in were dead, and you don't want to die. But,
no, exactly.
No, but there were some
outstanding people, and I like to be some of those people. So I feel good just being in the class and being around it. And some of the other people, like Reverend King was nominated, I'll admit. And as far as I know, they were the ones this year. Kenny had done quite a few things in Logan County. But I told Howard, I said, a lot of the things that you were writing that I did, you were right there with me. You know, you were doing them too, you know. God, I've always admired Howard because he did a lot of work on Western campus as far as the college chapter. The NAACP and things like that. I don't know whether they have a chapter. Do they have a chapter on campus now? I see at one time they were a chapter on campus. Then we had our youth chapter besides the regular chapter. And we were doing things. You know, we were able to get big scholarships out. One year I think we had two of our young people that competed nationally. Went to University of Kentucky, and Angela's daughter was the other in the department, and they competed with students, you know, that their parents had belonged to WCP, or they had to be, and they competed with all of the United States, all the children all of the United States, and you know, that's wonderful when you can get two out of your city, you know, they can win scholarships. Just think of all the thousands that yeah, right. That's right. Yes. But I don't know when we ever get things going. Kip Carr wanted to organize another chapter of the track, and the state president would not let him organize it. And he wanted to organize another chapter because the people in Bowling Green wanted another chapter. And they said they would be willing to go into chapter. That's when we had the other chapter. And the other chapter had been taken over by people out of the city. They really didn't know the problems, and they weren't addressing the problems. You know, it's more to these organizations than just having banquets. You know, you're not doing anything, you may as well not, you know, not have, and we still have problems. And we need to be working as a group to solve those problems. I had someone to say to me, they was talking about the people living, we call it the housing authority now, but at one time we called it the housing project. Talking about someone that still lived in the housing project after all these years. And I told them, I said, you know, when we had the open housing ordinance passed, most of the people that went up there to fight for open housing lived in the housing projects. Some of those people knew that they would never get out. I said, but they went up there because of people like you that could move into other areas and could afford it. I said, so you owe them something. Instead of trying to talk about it, you owe them something. And maybe they realized it. But, you know, and it's true. You find most of the people that really fight for change are people that will never really benefit from us sometimes. You know, I know some people that live where they're now that went up there and, you know, they weren't going to move anywhere else. They couldn't afford it. They didn't have the jobs that they could move. Maybe they were thinking of their children or thinking about people that could go. And we have to realize that as people. We have to appreciate those people that really get out there and do it, because most of the people that you find in certain levels, they are not going to speak out. There were some people on the commission when I was there, Human Rights Commission, they were school teachers.
And they would speak out against other things, but they would not speak out against the school system because they were afraid of their jobs. And they were good people. They'd speak out about other things, but they wouldn't speak out about that because they were afraid of their jobs. And, you know, maybe I can't blame them because, you know, they'd gone to school, you know, for that, and they knew the jobs weren't that plentiful. So you have to use other people to speak out for those things because they're not going to. I know there were one man that was on our commission. He was a principal of school. He was not black. But he wouldn't say anything in the meeting. But when we'd come out of the meeting, he would corner me off and tell me what we needed to do. And he said, I don't have many years before my retirement. I don't want to mess it up. And I don't blame him. You know, you can't blame him for that. But he would at least tell you things that was going on, things you need to do to help you.
I want to thank you for letting me interview you.
I'm glad to.